Ranch, supporting the Ranch Hands on Conservation and Nature programs for kids. Tickets, camping information, and more at ChicoBasinRanch.com. This is the community calendar for Tuesday, June 27th. In Longmont, this animated adventure is set at Tweedy's Chicken Farm, where any chicken who doesn't make her egg quota can meet a foul fate. Kids film series Chicken Run screens at the Longmont Museum at 10 a.m. this morning. For more on this and other events, or to put your event on the calendar, online at kgnu.org. The time is 8 o'clock. In about a minute, we will be going to BBC headlines and then the Morning Magazine with Maeve Conran. Again, our current temperature in the Front Range area is in the high 60s, and our high today is predicted to be in the high 90s. So take care to wear a hat and sunscreen and hydrate yourself.
Power companies and banks are experiencing major problems with their computer systems. Among those affected are the Ukrainian Central Bank, the state power distributor, Ukrenergo, the aircraft manufacturer Antonov, and two postal services. Kiev's Boryspil Airport has warned of possible delays, and the Kiev Metro has stopped accepting payment cards. Several chains of petrol stations have suspended operations. The Russian oil giant Rosneft also says its servers have been attacked. The European Commission has imposed a $2.7 billion fine on Google after ruling that the company had abused its power by favouring its own shopping services. Here's our business correspondent, Theo Leggett.
The Commission said the size of the fine, the largest it has ever imposed in a competition case, reflected the gravity of the offence. Google was targeted because of the way in which paid-for advertising is presented on its site. Its own Google Shopping feature, which allows consumers to see pictures of products alongside details of the shops which sell them and their prices, is displayed prominently on both Google's desktop and mobile sites. However, the Commission says that rival price comparison services are often much less visible, and in fact are sometimes deliberately pushed down the rankings. Google says it respectfully disagrees with the Commission's decision, which it'll study while it considers an appeal.
Reports from northern Syria say an airstrike on a prison run by the Islamic State group has killed at least 57 people. Our Arab Affairs analyst Alan Johnston reports.
The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the attack was on a jail in the town of Mayadeen. Most of the dead were prisoners and the rest were their IS guards. One report said many civilians had been held in the jail. The Syrian Observatory said it believed the US-led coalition launched the strike. The coalition says it will investigate, but it cast doubt on the reliability of the observatory's reporting. Others have questioned the coalition's own record in this area, saying it has very much underestimated the number of civilians it's killed in Syria and Iraq.
Russia has condemned a US warning that it will strike at the Syrian government if it uses chemical weapons. In a statement, the White House said there would be a heavy price to pay if such an attack was carried out. Here's Paul Adams.
The statement caught everyone off guard. Other parts of the US administration seem to be in the dark, as do America's allies, including the British. After the last suspected use of chemical weapons by the Assad regime in April, the United States launched a salvo of cruise missiles. But the latest warning, with its reference to Mr. Assad himself, seems deliberately designed to send a much starker message, that this time the Syrian regime could be targeted. A tweet from Nikki Haley, Washington's ambassador to the United Nations, made it clear that this was also a warning to President Assad's backers, Russia and Iran.
Paul Adams. This is the World News from the BBC.
BBC headlines take us up to 4 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, the 27th of June. Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll speak with the Colorado Health Institute on the Congressional Budget Office analysis of the Republican healthcare bill and what it could mean for Colorado. After that, we'll hear about the challenges facing people in wheelchairs who want to do what many of us take for granted in the summer months in Colorado, catch a show at Red Rocks. After that, a conversation with a California-based journalist on the connection between saving the sage-grouse here in Colorado and saving pinyon forests in other parts of the country. The comment line will take us to the bottom of the hour, and then After headlines from the BBC, it's time for science. Today on How on Earth, KGNU's award-winning science show, we'll have David Barron, who's author of the book American Eclipse. He'll talk about the solar eclipse that crossed the United States in 1878. Listen into that and to hear about why solar eclipses are so exciting and scientifically important. At 9 o'clock, it's Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, at 8:05, we'll begin with local headlines. Here's Sarah Dalgleish.
Colorado health officials and federal prosecutors allege that one of the largest oil and gas drillers along the Front Range has been violating clean air laws for years. PDC Energy has been accused of leaking dangerous chemicals from storage containers in Adams and Weld counties that could harm people and the environment. The company operates 600 tanks in the area, at least 86 groups of which have been found to be releasing volatile organic compounds. Excess volatile organic compound emission is a precursor to ground-level ozone. The area where PDC operates does not meet the requirements for clean air, and a civil lawsuit filed in Denver states the company's illegal emissions contributed to putting Colorado out of compliance with national clean air standards. PDC Chief Executive Bart Brookman says in a statement that his company has been in discussion with federal agencies for the past year about how to better comply with environmental protection standards. He said he hopes to work together with regulatory agencies to find a solution without involving the court. Last year, Colorado legislators created a plan to meet the 2008 ozone standard of 75 parts per billion, but say it will be until 2021 that the state is able to comply with the 2015 standard of 70 parts per billion. CU Boulder's campus dining has made a national list for sustainable, well-sourced food. Kathy Frazier has more.
The Good Food 100 list compiles self-reported but independently verified purchasing data of restaurants across the country to see where these establishments' food is coming from. Only two universities in the United States made the cut. Massachusetts Smith College, a private liberal arts college, was also recognized along with CU. Paul Houle, director of campus dining services at CU, told the Daily Camera that campus dining is not what it used to be and that students' palates are changing and buying local is important. To get on the list, CU officials took about a month to go back through its records and find the source of the campus food ingredients. Then they categorized whether it was local, regional, or nationally sourced. When CU buys ingredients, it takes into consideration factors like carbon sequestration, whether the food is organic, or if its growing process was intrusive on the land. For KGNU, I'm Kathy Frazier.
On Monday, the Supreme Court announced it will hear the case of a Colorado baker who refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple, backing his choice with religious reasons. The decision, which is expected to be reached next year, will focus on the clash seen nationwide between people wishing to exercise their religious rights in businesses and the rights of gay and lesbian people to equal services. Jack Phillips, the owner of Masterpiece Cakes in Lakewood, would not create a wedding cake for couple David Mullins and Charlie Craig in 2012. They planned to marry in Massachusetts as gay marriage had not been legalized in Colorado yet and wanted the cake for a reception they planned to hold in Denver after their marriage. The couple filed discrimination charges against Masterpiece Cakes and won their case in Colorado. Phillips argues that his First Amendment rights to free expression and religious freedom should override the Colorado anti-discrimination laws that protect people based on sexual orientation. Mullins and Craig defend their rights to receive the same services from the store that someone ordering a cake for a heterosexual wedding would. The Supreme Court first considered the case in September and continually slotted it for further discussion at the conference during which the justices decided which cases to take. Its selection came as a surprise to many, as numerous similar cases have been rejected by the Supreme Court recently, including a 2014 case in which a New Mexico photographer refused to photograph a lesbian couple's commitment ceremony. The case will be heard during the term beginning next October. It's currently 65 degrees in the Front Range with highs in the low 90s. It will be partly cloudy today but sunny tomorrow and Thursday with highs in the 80s. Friday will be rainy and 75 before a warm weekend with temperatures in the mid-80s again. For KGNU News, I'm Sarah Dalgleish.
It's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. As we've been hearing this morning, the just-released Congressional Budget Office report on the Republican health care bill shows that 22 million Americans could lose their health insurance. And that's just one of the problems that healthcare advocates have identified with the bill. I spoke with Joe Hannell of the Colorado Health Institute.
The CBO analysis fits pretty well with an analysis that we have done on Colorado, and specifically on Colorado Medicaid. The biggest issue in this bill, just like the biggest issue in the Affordable Care Act, is Medicaid. That's a program that covers about one in four Coloradans now, and it focuses mostly on low-income people. There's a lot of kids in there, also some older people who are in nursing homes and have spent down their savings, disabled people, and then some able-bodied adults that the Affordable Care Act expanded Medicaid to. This bill would, first of all, repeal that expansion for mostly for able-bodied adults, and then it would also cap spending for those other groups, and that would have the effect of, in real terms, reducing money for Medicaid in Colorado through the next decade and more. So we predict, we've built a computer model. We project that there would be about $15 billion less funding for the state of Colorado over the first decade this bill took effect, and about 630,000 people would lose their insurance through Medicaid, and most of them would not be able to afford to get insurance on the private market. So we would see our uninsured rate go way, way up, and the state legislature just would not be able to find $15 billion. It's just not a doable thing for them.
Granted, 25% of the state being on Medicaid is a huge number, but for the other 75% of people in the state of Colorado who have private health insurance, maybe they aren't paying attention, or maybe they could be thinking, well, this doesn't impact me, but this is wide-ranging and it seems to impact
Sure.
everybody. So what are some of the other impacts aside from Medicaid on people in Colorado?
Right. Well, another big group in Colorado that gets government health care is Medicare. There's a tax on Medicare that went on high-income earners to fund Medicare that the Affordable Care Act put into effect. This would repeal that tax, and earlier projections have shown it would accelerate the day when the Medicare trust fund runs out of money, which would mean they would have to make some sort of changes to the Medicare program or raise some sort of tax in order to fund it. So that day of reckoning is coming by the middle of the next decade if this bill passes. Second, a minority of people who have private insurance get it straight through an insurance company, what's called the individual market. And the Affordable Care Act gave subsidies for folks who make, say, less than $50,000 a year to buy in that market. This bill keeps those subsidies, but it makes them less valuable, and it reduces the number of people who can get them. The income test would top out around $42,000. So some people getting help to buy insurance right now wouldn't get it anymore. That's going to affect mainly older people, lower-income people, people in rural areas, exactly the type of folks who can't afford insurance already under the Affordable Care Act. Those will the studies that we've looked at show it's going to get worse, and the Congressional Budget Office shows that as well, that a lot of people would not be able to afford insurance anymore.
And getting back to the Medicaid question, when people don't have basic health insurance, they very often rely on emergency rooms for that primary care, and that raises the cost of healthcare for everybody.
Sure. Yeah. The reason we harp so much on insurance coverage is because over the years of studying what makes healthcare work, really we see insurance as the first step, and it's only a first step in getting to have a healthier life, and then just a healthier society as a whole. Once people are insured, then they can go and see the doctor. They can get some untreated problems solved and get on the path to longer-term health. After that, they can learn better how to use care, how to access this really complex medical system we have, how to just have a healthier lifestyle. It all follows kind of a path that starts with the first step in getting insurance. We've done pretty well in this state in the past few years in reducing the number of uninsured. We estimate there's about 350,000 people in Colorado who didn't have insurance, and that's half the number that it was a couple of years earlier. We're now looking at going back to pre-Affordable Care Act, where say one in seven Coloradans didn't have insurance, and that's going to mean people walking in the doors of hospitals are no longer paying customers, and hospitals will have to eat those costs and possibly pass it on to the rest of everybody else.
That's Joe Hamill. He's with the Colorado Health Institute. You can find out more about their research on the impact, particularly the impact on Medicaid in Colorado, of the Republican healthcare bill. That's at ColoradoHealthInstitute.org. And coming up this Friday on Connections at 8:30 a.m., host Kathy Partridge will get to the nitty-gritty of the Senate healthcare bill and its impact on Coloradans. She'll speak with doctors, policy experts and activists, including Katie Kelly of Indivisible Front Range Resistance and Mo Keller of Mental Health Colorado. As always on Connections, your calls will be welcome. It's 8:16. This is KGNU. Summer is upon us, and for many in Colorado, summer is that time to go and catch live music at an outdoor venue. It's somewhere like Red Rocks. But for people with mobility issues, people in wheelchairs, catching a summer show at Red Rocks takes months of forward planning, and even then, you still may not get to go due to restrictions on wheelchair access. And that's something that Lorraine Filomeno knows all too well.
I haven't really been able to attend a concert at Red Rocks because meaning people in wheelchairs, are now relegated to the very last row. And anyone that likes music can't really appreciate how awful it is in the back, or can appreciate how awful it is in the last row. The sound is flowing in every direction. It is a party atmosphere, people standing, blocking view, talking, taking selfies, and that's fine if that's what you're there for, but that's not what I go to a concert for. I go to listen to the music and appreciate the music and the artist. About, I want to say, 4 or 5 years ago, I don't remember, I received tickets to attend a concert at Red Rocks. So when I do receive comp tickets, I call the venue to exchange them for accessible seating. And when I did that with Red Rocks, I was told that they didn't have any seats. And this was months in advance. And I said, so there's no accessible seating? And I was told no. So I didn't go to the show. Then sometime later, I don't remember if it was that same year or the next year, I received comp tickets again for a show at Red Rocks. So once again, I called the city of Denver requesting accessible seating and was told once again that there weren't any available. And by this time, I was kind of hacked. So I asked for the supervisor and I spoke with him, and he said, no, there were not any seats. And I said, I find it really hard to believe that several months in advance to the show, all of the accessible seating has been taken. And then I called back and I spoke with someone else, and she informed me that the accessible seats were right in the front and they were really good seats. And how could I expect to get one? It was very unnerving. So I kind of gave up on Red Rocks for a while. Then I received comp tickets again, and this time AXS was handling the seating. Actually, AXS had been handling the seating all along, but I was talking to the city of Denver. This time I had to talk to AXS. And I was told once again there were no accessible seats available, but in the front, but there was another row, another section in the venue. So I said, okay. I didn't know where it was. I'd never been there before. It was the very last row, and it was just absolutely awful. I will never go back and sit there again. And I have since learned, after speaking with other friends that are in chairs also, that this problem started when AXS took over ticketing, and that they are basically selling those seats in the front in the accessible area to anybody who has enough money to sit there. And it's very unfair because with the configuration of Red Rocks, it is physically impossible for someone with a wheelchair to sit anyplace else. I would be perfectly happy sitting in the middle of the venue, but I physically cannot get there in a chair.
That's Lorraine Filomeno sharing her experiences of trying to go see music shows at Red Rocks while being in a wheelchair. Well, the issue about ticketing and reserving front row spaces for people in wheelchairs at Red Rocks is actually the subject of a lawsuit that was filed against the City of Denver, which operates the venue. Back in December, we heard from Alison Daniels, the attorney who represents the plaintiffs in the suit. She told us that people with disabilities, if they actually want to be able to get that front row seat, well, they're often paying three or four or even five times the value of a ticket. I caught up with Alison recently to get an update on the case. And just to note, Lorraine Filomeno, who we just heard from, is not actually one of the plaintiffs in this case.
Things are still moving ahead. We did request an extension of the timelines from the court to allow us some more time to discuss potential settlement options with the city, and the court approved that. So we have a little bit of breathing room to try to figure out if we're going to be able to settle this or if this is going to end up being a trial. In the meantime, several of our plaintiffs have gone to Red Rocks and had pretty varied experiences in doing so. I will say that the city has attempted to make some changes short term to address some of the concerns. They have some signage up. They have staff that seems to be assigned to the front row to help coordinate getting people refreshments or things that they may need that may not have been accessible previously. Shuttle system seems to be working better with different signage as well. So it does appear that the city has worked with the staff at Red Rocks and are trying to make the experience better for patrons who get there. But what our biggest focus has been and remains is really the ticketing and getting people, you know, to the gates to begin with.
So just remind our listeners what the issue there is, because I think if people aren't in this situation themselves where they need a disability access for these type of venues, they might not realise how incredibly difficult it can be for somebody with reduced mobility or a wheelchair to gain access to venues like Red Rocks, but specifically Red Rocks being that natural amphitheatre with all of the steps. What has been the issue with access and the ticketing?
Well, so it's actually two different issues when we talk about access and ticketing. Access is literally the physical accessibility of Red Rocks, and our lawsuit does not generally address that because there are just simply limitations given that it's a natural amphitheater built into the rocks. And that's why we want to focus so much on the ticketing, because we have two rows, row 1 and row 70, that people who use wheelchairs are able to get to. The issue there is because Red Rocks is a unique venue, and row 1 is the accessible row. That row also is very sought after by people who do not need it for disability-related reasons. So trying to make sure that row 1 ends up being, tickets end up being bought by or given to people who actually need it for disability-related reasons rather than people who just want to be in the front row has been the major challenge.
That's Alison Daniels with the Disability Law Colorado, a law firm representing plaintiffs in a suit against the City of Denver over ticketing at Red Rocks. Daniels says that the plaintiffs that she represents are hoping to come to an out-of-court settlement with the City of Denver over ticketing at Red Rocks. And they're hoping to do that by the end of the summer. But she says if a settlement cannot be reached, they will move ahead with the lawsuit. It's 8:24. You're listening to KGNU. Will Falk is a grassroots environmental activist who lives in Park City, Utah, and he's been working to raise awareness about the pinyon juniper deforestation in the western U.S. He spoke with KGNU's Jennifer Murnan about the connection between the sage grouse here in Colorado, which is considered an endangered species, and this endangered habitat.
In a sane, sustainable world, protecting sage grouse and protecting pinyon juniper forests would involve the same things. It would involve reducing development or ending development in places like the Colorado Plateau and the Great Basin, where greater sage grouse and pinyon juniper forests live side by side. The greater sage grouse is an iconic bird in the western United States, and so it commands a certain loyalty, a certain zealous reaction from activists in the area. But about 2 years ago, the Department of the Interior was asked to list the greater sage grouse as an endangered species. And they ended up declining to list the greater sage grouse because of what they called a coalition and cooperation between corporations, industry, landowners, government organizations like the Bureau of Land Management and the United States Forest Service to account for greater sage grouse and to do things to protect them. Included in this plan was plans to clear cut potentially 7 million acres of pinyon juniper forest.
What was the logic behind cutting down all the pinyon juniper forests? You say they've been coexisting.
At the very fundamental level, the greater sage grouse is threatened by agriculture, oil and gas drilling, livestock grazing, development, and these human activities have reduced sage grouse range by nearly half. So the logic behind saying that clear cutting forests will save the sage grouse is simply a way to distract attention from anthropogenic forces in the western United States. It's a way to scapegoat something besides human activities. There is some shoddy science that has largely been sponsored by ranching and mining interests that says that pinyon juniper forests are encroaching upon sage grouse habitat and that sage grouse don't want to live in these habitats. But there is more science and more clear science that say that sage grouse actually do not like to live in places that have been clear cut of their forests or even of the sagebrush, which is something that goes on too. The economic interests that fuel the excuses to cut forests, especially ranching and mining. For ranchers, when you clear cut a forest, you, for the first couple of years, you open up the space that you cut to grazing vegetation. So when a rancher wants to bring more cattle onto their land, a good way to open up for a little while is to cut the forest. So when they found the sage grouse, they turned the sage grouse into sort of their cause, which they can throw to the public and say, hey, public, you'll be protecting sage grouse if you cut these forests. And while those forests are being cut, ranchers can run their cattle into the clear cuts. So it's a really interesting. It's a really interesting co-optation of the environmental movement of concerned citizens by taking good-hearted people's desire to protect one species, they are destroying the habitat of other species like pinyon pine trees and juniper trees.
That's Will Falk, who's a writer and environmental activist. He's based in Park City, Utah, speaking there with KGNU's Jennifer Murnan. To find out more about the pinyon juniper deforestation, you can go to the website pinyonjuniperforests.org. There's also a Facebook page, Protect Pinyon Juniper Forest, or you can Google Pinyon Juniper Alliance, and we'll put those links at kgnu.org. Time now for the comment line.
Hi, I'm calling about the program on North Korea that was just aired on KGNU this Friday, the 23rd, I think it is, from 8:30 to 9 o'clock. Wow, I'm a longtime KGNU member and supporter, and I don't think I've ever heard a more ill-informed, jingoistic, militaristic, demonizing, and one-sided interview in all of those years that I've supported KGNU. I have no idea why you all would think it was appropriate to air something like that, especially at this time when the discourse and the conduct is getting polarized and ramping up between our country and North Korea. This woman didn't even know enough about North Korea to be able to explain the history of how the North and South Korea were formed and how someone who was as ill-informed as she should be thought of as an expert who should be on the air for half an hour talking at the rest of us. I have no idea. I'm really, really stunned that this program was aired. It was full of misinformation and incomplete information, and there were fortunately some callers who tried to push back, but they were brought in far too late to really even begin to undo the damage that was done. I can't tell you how disappointed I am.
And that is the comment line. We'll join headlines from the BBC in progress.
Putin. The authorities in the northeast of Nigeria are digging a 27-kilometre trench around the University of Maiduguri following an attack by a suicide bomber on Sunday. The Islamist militant group Boko Haram was founded in Maiduguri and it has attacked the city many times. The authorities in Italy say the flow of mainly African migrants coming towards Italian shores from Libya continues unabated. The Italian Coast Guard says that on Monday alone it rescued more than 5,000 migrants off the coast of Libya. The organisers of a German school visit to Holocaust memorial sites in Poland are to complain to the Polish embassy about the physical threats and insults encountered by Muslim schoolgirls on the trip. One was threatened with a knife, another was spat at, a third was ordered out of a shop for speaking Persian. BBC News.
This programme is brought to you by the KGNU listener members and by Greenride Boulder, the local company who offers timely shared ride transportation between Boulder area residents, businesses, and their convention hubs, and Denver International Airport. More information at greenrideboulder.com.
This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Fisk Planetarium on the CU Boulder campus, providing innovative